Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Canes Wiki podcast. Mason Little here on this microphone, James Guidotti on the other one. It's a Sunday afternoon. We are between games two and three of the Stanley Cup Finals. Tampa Bay Lightning having evening the series last night 4-3 to ensure that we will not see a sweep. The last sweep was 1998, the Detroit Red Wings. So
Almost last year,
but not last year. So we're working on 20 years without a sweep, as the Tampa Bay Lightning force at least a game five. James, though, you see Chicago in six, and you got to see a bit more of the game than I did last night. Just jumping right into it. First of all, congrats to your sister. Graduation. You're a busy guy today.
I am running around.
Yeah, you got a lot going on. But what did you see last night, man?
Well, I'll tell you, I saw a very weak goal from Corey Crawford, obviously. I mean, honestly, we were talking about this before we started recording. Joel Quenneville pretty much called him out. He was very okay.
He was just okay. Just okay. He pulled the Randy Carlyle line on James Reimer, which, as we all know in Toronto media, went over spectacularly.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it'll go over spectacularly in Chicago during the Stanley Cup Finals.
At least there's only one day to talk about it.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, That's the backbreaker, man, for me. I mean, the momentum had swung to Chicago, and that the back of that second period was all Chicago after they put up those quick two goals. You know, Teravainen looked great all night, and that's been kind of the story for them. This, you know, Quenneville's very slow to trust his rookies, and it's been surprising that he's trusted Teravainen so much, but he's it's paid off. You can't argue with it. And his give and go with Hossa there on that power play was, I mean, just outstanding, and that's the way you've got to make teams pay. And Tampa did the same to Chicago when Patty Sharp took back-to-back penalties. And frankly, a weak goal from Crawford and undisciplined play from Sharp and that whole line really was a bit of Chicago's undoing. Frankly, they gave it away. They should be walking out of Tampa with 2-0, with a 2-0 lead in the series. And statistically, if you're up with a 2-0 lead in the Stanley Cup final, I believe the record of teams is 44-5 going up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup final. That was a big chance to grab a hold of things, and they let that slip away. I still think Chicago went six going forward, and I really think, you know, sounds like Ben Bishop might be hurt.
Yeah, the goalie juggling last night between him and Andrei Vasilevskiy ultimately saw Vasilevskiy become the first. What's that?
Did you see Luongo's tweet?
What did Lou say?
Just a picture, just an emoji of a toilet.
Oh, naturally. Okay, poopy. Yeah, no, that's not surprising.
I mean, poop, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, Luongo poking fun at himself for having to miss a pretty important... was it a playoff game? I don't think it was.
I don't think it was.
But having to recuse himself from the crease. It was speculated for a while that that's exactly what Ben Bishop was going through, but his was not gastrointestinal, but rather... More of a joint issue, eh?
Yeah. Apparently, you know, it's speculated it's a knee thing. I think it was Sportsnet that pointed out it was some incident where Vermette ran into him and he might have tweaked his knee and, you know, went out, came back in, obviously wasn't right and came back out, resulting in Vasilevskiy getting the win.
Becoming the first goaltender to win a Stanley Cup final game in relief since? 1991. Frank Pietrangelo for the Pittsburgh Penguins over the Minnesota North Stars.
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
That's a 24 quite a piece
years.
Of trivia.
24 years.
Did the internet tell you that, or did you come up with that?
Oh, no, the internet, 100%.
Okay.
100%.
I don't know if you had filled your brain with those kind of facts now at this point.
No, but now it is.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Now you'll just reel it off.
Frank Pietrangelo.
You know,
1991. Andrei Vasilevskiy was not born at the time. He's 1994. I think he's 94, right?
I think so.
Because he was... 2012 draft, first round. We were talking about this earlier. Jamie McLennan, Noodles, on TSN 1050 Toronto, Leafs Lunch, he is all about Andrei Vasilevskiy. Anytime he gets a chance to talk about Vasilevskiy, he waxes poetic about him. This guy is the next Carey Price. He was not selected as high as Price. I think he was in the mid-20s, maybe teens, was Vasilevskiy. But it appears as though... Well, I was going to say, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here and get away from talking about last night's game and about this series in general, but Ben Bishop might be screwed in that no matter what you do, no matter how close to a Vezina you can get, whether you win it or not, even if you win a Stanley Cup, and for a while it looked like he was a Conn Smythe candidate as well, but it looks like he might be screwed in the future for Tampa Bay's net. Not just Vasilevsky, but another European netminder, Kristaps Gudlevskis, another young goalie in their prospect system. The Latvian sensation who played really well in the World Juniors a couple years back. It's a young net in Tampa, and Vasilevsky looks like he might have to take it over a little bit earlier than they might have hoped, getting an early start maybe tomorrow in Game 3.
Yeah, well, it's still, he's an unproven commodity, and that's, I guess, the really big thing. I mean, dude, you're putting in, I mean, wow, this is going to remind a lot of people of there have been a number of goalies. We referenced Jussi Markkanen earlier, and how much of his impact is this going to have going forward? I mean, you know, like I said, unproven commodities. Guy's 20 years old. He's stepping onto the big stage. I mean, he's shown great ability in pressure situations in the World Juniors. But yeah, you got to give, if this is a big critical juncture, and if Bishop is out for a couple of games, I mean, advantage Chicago at that point. And they gave that one away last night. And you know, guys like them that have been there, done this, and they're well aware that they gave that away. They dominated in a lot of ways. Interestingly enough, if you look at a lot of the possession metric from last night, the matchups of Keith against Victor Hedman, and either Hedman or Strawman, did not go in Keith's favor.
No. Thanks to our friends on War on Ice, we can see that Keith was a 2-4 and a 9 against for a minus 7 overall against Hedman, and a 3 and an 8 for a minus 5 against Strawman. Didn't do very well against them. Did okay against the Stamkos line, 9-5 in favor of Keith, 8-5 in favor of Stamkos' center, Valtteri Filppula. But overall, Cooper was able to get the changes he wanted, using his, not just his D, but his forwards really effectively, Callahan, Paquette, and Brown, to shut down the Taves, Kane, and Saad line. I mean, what was it that we just said? 10-21. 10 minutes and 21 seconds of ice time were shared between Ryan Callahan and Jonathan Taves. That's some hardcore matching. Yeah. That's some very strict matching on the part of John Cooper. Also throwing Hedman out for 10:35 against Taves and Strawman for 10:51 against the Chicago captain. Strawman going 8-8 as well as Victor Hedman. So an even 50% there for the top pair of Tampa Bay against the captain of Chicago. So what do you anticipate in terms of Quenneville's matchups for tomorrow and then Wednesday's game, James?
I think obviously you've got to take advantage of Tampa's bottom four, in all honesty. I mean, I found it, and you know, through the Eastern Conference Final, obviously, which I was very much invested in at the time, and really Stanley Cup Final, dude. I mean, Schuster has been largely unnoticeable, if not abjectly bad at points. So has Matt Carl, you know, especially so. Braden Coburn wasn't too great last night. Garrison was okay. So really, they're probably going to want to match up the Kane line, Teravainen, and really those second and third lines for Chicago want to line up against them. You'd think Taves is still going to be the shutdown line, especially if they keep Hossa on his wing. And it was pointed out last night. I mean, they moved Hossa up to his wing, you know, because Tampa's starting to play pretty physical. And you put Kane into those positions where he's going to get drilled. He doesn't hit. It's just not his game. And if he does, it's not going to make a lot of impact. They kind of need that extra edge up there with Saad, Taves, and Hossa. And it's got that two-way game, too, overall. That's going to be another big matchup. I mean, the triplets line is going to have to get shut down because they were outstanding last night. I mean, Tyler Johnson's kind of, greasy goal aside.
Mm-hmm.
They dominated possession, dude. I mean, they've been doing the same thing they've been doing all playoffs. I mean, they were a little quiet in game one, but I think, you know, they're surging back, and as a lot of people pointed out, TJ was due, and he's probably really their Conn Smythe favorite going forward.
No question. Patrick Kane was the only Chicago skater to generate more Corsi events against Tyler Johnson than, for Tyler Johnson. So Johnson was phenomenal last night, seeing a lot of time against Andrew Desjardins and that shutdown line, and as well as Johansson, he played 7 minutes against. These are just so much fun to go against. 9-4 for Tyler Johnson's favor against Johansson. 6-4 his favor against Oduya. 9-4 TJ over Duncan Keith. Like, yeah, he was a little generating machine and absolutely a Conn Smythe favorite right now, and especially solidifying it with last night's goal. Now the sole holder for most postseason goals in a single postseason in Tampa Bay Lightning history, which has got a sting for Brad Richards on the other end of this final.
Yeah, no kidding. That's one thing I've always noticed about this whole... did you notice last night, speaking of Brad Richards, that he actually had pretty good jump in his step? I really noticed that at a couple points. Last year after the Rangers got knocked out, I pretty much wrote him off as being done. He just looked slow and old. But I don't know if it's playing with the players he is, whether he's got Kane on his wing or whoever. It opens up so much space for him. And he had a lot of really good looks, and it's only a matter of time, a guy like that. He's not going to produce anything like he ever used to, especially not in the playoffs. But, you know, if Chicago's going to push through here, guys like him are going to step up. It's just the way it's going to be.
Speaking of Conn Smythe, though, I think, I mean, you're still picking Chicago, but if Tampa Bay wins it, what do you say are the odds that Victor Hedman wins it and becomes the first Swede to win it since Henrik Zetterberg?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. I would obviously favor that, if anything. I mean, Johnson's been outstanding, and it's hard to vote against him. I mean, dude, Victor Hedman has just turned on another gear. I mean, it's unfair to see a man that big move like that and have that much skill. And it's a steal. It's a goddamn steal.
$4.5 million
for the next couple of years.
Until the summer of 2019. Or no, sorry.
17, isn't
$4 million until the summer of 2017. I was looking at Strawman. Victor Hedman, $4 million a year next year and the following year. So he'll see that doubled sometime over the next 24 months.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that kind of... This is the kind of stuff that Steve Yzerman has been able to do in his first couple years in Tampa, is make sure that he doesn't have... I mean, Callahan is his longest contract right now, and that runs until 2020 at 5.8. Anton Strowman is the next one, and he's up in 2019. Other than that, you have... Obviously, you have to re-sign Stamkos, and that's going to go as long... That's going to go the max 8 years. So that'll be 2024 for him, whatever he gets, whatever he wants. But he's... Yzerman, that is, has opened up so much space for creativity right now. Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, Brian Boyle, Jonathan Drouin, Victor Hedman, all UFAs in 2019. UFAs, summer 2016, Steven Stamkos, JT Brown's an RFA, Alex Killorn, Nikita Kucherov, Cedric Paquette, UFA Braden Coburn, UFA Matthias Olin. And then free agents this upcoming year, Andreas Schuster, you don't have to worry about. Mark Barberio, Luke Witkowski, who cares? Vlad Domestikov, probably try to keep him. Brendan Morrow, you're gone, but this is what they have, and then they'll still have, looks like a couple million space open up, and then both Bish and Vasilevsky are on for two more years. So he has a lot of room. I mean, he doesn't really have whole much. Like, in 2 years, everyone's going to have either a new contract or a new team.
Yeah.
This is how you do things in the new cap. This is how you do things.
Which, I mean, we've seen GMs now. I think, you ever wonder that starting in probably like 07, 08 is when the cap started rising, GMs started experimenting with how to finagle the cap, and we've seen it not pan out. You think guys now kind of have a grasp on it? I mean, because Yzerman seems to have it figured out a little bit more. I mean, Chiarelli mismanaged it after he was lauded for having, you know, put together such an incredible team, and he did.
Chris Kelly at $3 million will do that to you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, notwithstanding, if you're the New York Rangers, you're pretty much ready to just buy out the contracts you need. That's different if you print your own money. Steve Yzerman's found a good, really excellent medium in terms of managing length and term. That's the same thing. And, you know, the amount of money dished out, especially considering up until recently, Tampa was on a pretty tight budget, realistically. I mean, they're willing to spend the money on players they needed, a la Stamkos. But signing Victor Hedman to a bargain contract, being able to sign Strawman for what they did at a short term, and using really term to their advantage. You know, the Rangers weren't going to give Callahan the term he wanted, although he did sign for almost the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they offered, which is obviously, maybe the Rangers didn't believe that was such a bargaining tactic, and he's being very real. You know.
Well, and you compare that to what they're up against right now, where you have Taves and Kane on until the next Ice Age at 10.5 mil.
Making God money.
So 11 mil or 21 mil between the two of them right there. Add another 5 and change for 26 with Marian Hossa. Add another 5.5, and now we're almost at 32 with Duncan Keith. And then add another 6, and we're close to $40 million with Corey Crawford added on. And all of these are going to 2020 or beyond.
Well, let's look at the aggregate here, too. So, look, they're probably losing Oduya. Right?
Yes.
We're saying losing Oduya.
Yes.
Seabrook has already apparently come out and said he's expecting 7 to 8 mil for his next contract.
Which, okay, great.
Yeah.
Have fun somewhere else.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. So on the aggregate.
Seabrook,
here,
by the way, 2016.
Yeah, I know.
Yep,
he's got another
year. Yep. Just putting it out there.
But yeah, so he'll probably, you have to imagine if he sticks to that, he's getting traded at some point next season. So let's keep this in mind. In the aggregate, don't you want to probably give some of those younger guys coming up on the blue line a shot? David Rundblad, maybe? Maybe Trevor Van Riemsdyk?
Maybe, definitely TVR.
Yeah.
How about Brandon Saad, RFA this summer? Yeah. What are you going to do with him?
You're going to have to give him some. They're going to re-sign him because they need a guy to play with Taves and play with Kane and be able to move up and down through, at least definitely through the top nine, obviously top six.
And Andrew Shaw is the exact kind of guy. He's an RFA summer 2016. He's the exact kind of guy who does not deserve over $3 million, but someone will give him $5 million because David Clarkson happened. And he's the kind of guy that's going to get a ton of money from some other team because sometimes these kinds of players get overvalued. So you can probably say goodbye to Shaw Daddy.
You need
as
someone
well.
To bite people. So, you know.
Yeah. He's got some chomp to his game, no doubt. Yeah. So a great game last night, really entertaining. Hopefully a lot of new fans were made. Apparently it did phenomenally well in the overnight. Did you get a chance to see those numbers?
I did not see the exact numbers. I saw it was set, like, I don't know if it was flat out records, but
set the NBC ratings record, a 4.8 overnight ratings. It's the best Stanley Cup Final Game 2 ratings since getting the rights in 2005-2006.
Let's not pretend this had nothing to do with the Triple Crown.
It had a lot to do with the Triple Crown. It was a 22.6 overnight in Chicago and a 15.1 in Tampa. The next three markets being Buffalo, Milwaukee, and Fort Myers. So Buffalo and Milwaukee. Thank you, Milwaukee. Odd.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, close to Chicago, about 2 hours north.
Yeah, I guess.
On the lakeside. But
you could attest to the. Number of Hawks fans in Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah, quite a few.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially in southern Wisconsin, it's more Hawks than Wild, but once you start getting up into the northern parts of the state, then you start seeing more Mini. But it was up 5%. Last night's game was up 5% over last year's game, too. A two-overtime game between New York and L.A., the two biggest media markets. Holy cow, yep. We're talking with some serious numbers here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how much of it was American Pharoah? Sure. I mean, we can debate that, but this is pulling really well.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, it's really significant.
You got to be happy if you're an American hockey fan right now.
Yeah. I mean, people watch and tune in. I mean, look, dude, this is probably the fastest Stanley Cup final I've seen in some time. It really has lived up to the hype. And last night, it was just back and forth and absolutely riveting. You know, it's also nice to be super objective and unbiased now at this point. Being able to just enjoy this game objectively. But look, I mean, we said this going in. I mean, this is going to be the fastest Stanley Cup final we've seen in some time and definitely the most high-paced. And like by the time, halfway through the first period, it opened up and it was just like a track meet. And it's been great, dude. Like, if any American hockey fan is ready to, or burgeoning hockey fan is ready to tune into a Stanley Cup final where they have no real emotional investment, this is the one, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so available. Remember, it's on NBC.
Every single game.
Sportsnet for games 3 and 4.
Oh, shit, really?
Uh-huh. Yes, sir. Games 3 and 4 in Chicago will be on NBC Sportsnet, which I get that they have to boost those ratings a little bit.
But you should probably capitalize on this NBC business, right?
Well, I mean, thank God it's even right now, because if it were a sweep... If the cup, can you imagine if the cup were awarded and it wasn't on cable television? It wasn't on basic access?
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
Oh, man.
So thank God that we've got that situation behind us. But tomorrow, Monday, game 3 in Chicago. Wednesday, game 4 also in Chicago on NBC Sportsnet. Folks, don't forget to check farther down, a couple pages scrolling down if you're a Time Warner customer like myself. So... Yeah, we're going to see a bit of a hit there. You know, we're not going to see the numbers quite like they were in game 2, but by the time this picks up 5, 6, 7, who knows, we could be setting other high watermarks there. It's certainly been an entertaining series, but I'm going to have to miss. I'll be able to watch tomorrow and Wednesday. Actually, a buddy of mine, you remember Will Surratt?
Yeah.
Yeah, a buddy of mine that I went to high school with is on a National Geographic show called American Genius that airs tomorrow night. This was a guy who went to NYU for acting. I did acting with him in high school, but he's got his little gig here. He's on one episode of a show. And that's at, I think, 9 o'clock tomorrow, so I'm going to have to pause the game and watch that for a little bit.
I'll text you everything that's happening while you're...
Yeah, well, like, I don't really believe in going... I mean, I'm obviously going to be... checking Twitter and keeping up because I hate not watching live sports. I can't be the kind of guy that, like, the next day, don't tell me what happened.
I abandoned that a while ago.
Can't do that. I cannot do that. I have to stay live.
You can't escape it at some point.
That's part of it. Like, if you want to be at all part of the conversation, you know, then you have to be, you can't have any kind of delay.
Well, if you have any contact with any communication with the outside world, you'll find out. Like I realized that about like last year during the Rangers run, I was kind of like that. I'd say probably by the Montreal series last year in the Eastern Conference final, I had abandoned it because I think it was game two that Montreal won that one. I remember I did the no one tell me. I got on the internet within 30 seconds. I was like, oh, shit, no, yep. I know. So I just fast forwarded through all the goals. Like, why don't I just watch the highlights at that point? You know, it's just an inefficient way to watch a game. You know, gotta follow it live.
Yeah, you got to. And so I'll have to take a pause from that tomorrow as I support my buddy who's doing a silly thing that he loves. And then Wednesday I'll be able to watch it. But Wednesday's my last night in the States for a while. Games 5 on Saturday, 6 on Monday, and a tentative 7 on Wednesday.
It's going 6.
I think it's going 7, but
I really think it's going 6, man.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty confident with this.
I'm not feeling confident about anything anymore, but I'm just going to pick 7 just because those I'll be gone for. So, sad to say that this is going to be our last show, my last show anyway, until we already know who's got their name on Lord Stanley.
Yeah.
And then coming back, let's see. Let me pull up a calendar here. I will be back 18, 19-ish. So the end of next week, the following Friday is the NHL draft. Is it Ale House Downtown? I think it's Ale House Downtown.
I think that's what we decided on.
Ale House Downtown, courtesy of Patrick Clark. So if you haven't gotten your seat reserved for that, go ahead and do
probably
so.
Do that.
Just for the sake of the staff, the bartenders and the servers and the hostesses at Carolina Ale House, you know, just so they know the size that's coming. But do come, guys. Friday, June 26th. At the Carolina Ale House for the NHL draft. We'll be doing a little bit of a watch party there. We'll probably have some kind of pooling system. I would be remiss if we did not bet some money on who Carolina selects at fifth overall. But that'll be the week after I get back, so we'll probably be able to squeeze in a little bit of a draft preview show that week. But this may or may not be the last episode until then, unless James feels like picking things up by himself and going solo next week. So thanks for listening to another edition of the Canes Wiki podcast. Mason Little here, James Guidotti on the other mic, and everyone have fun with the rest of this series because it's going to be a blast.